Hi, and you're listening to the Keto Happiness Podcast with me, Rob Saunders. It's show 14, and our guest today is Sam Feltham, or the Director of the Public Health Collaboration. We'll be with Sam in one moment, but as usual, Keto Happiness is an educational purpose podcast. If you're embarking on a new fitness regime, new way of eating, anything like that, see your doctor, healthcare professional, or any sort of professional that's to do with a diet and dietitians. If you're looking at starting a keto or low carb lifestyle, go over to our friends, the Two Keto Dudes, at start.2keto.com, and they will sort you out, and they're much better than me in explaining the technical bits and pieces. Now, our guest today is Sam Feltham. Now, Sam has been in the health and fitness industry for over a decade, starting out as a party coordinator at a sports centre and working his way up to studying at the European Institute of Fitness. And he qualified as a master personal trainer. Then, after 5 years of running a fitness boot camp, Sam decided to move away from that in order to fully focus on improving public health by setting up and directing the Public Health Collaboration, which has its annual conference just gone actually last weekend, and also Real Food Rocks, which is a festival up in the Lake District. Welcome, Sam.
Pleasure to be here, Rob.
Oh, pleasure. Pleasure's all mine, mate. I've done your introduction now with all the fancy music, but now we take a little bit things seriously. How did you get into all this then, Sam?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey for me with all of this. So my professional career has been varied, to say the least. I post-university, I was a website designer straight out of university because that's what I studied at uni.
Oh, that's my normal business.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Excellent. I managed to do that for a year before I decided I wanted to get out of Dodge.
Yeah.
I basically, did it for a year, managed to earn enough money to go traveling. And I ended up in New Zealand. And then I managed to become a snowboard instructor in New Zealand, basically. And then for the following 4 years, I was a snowboard instructor, either in New Zealand in the Southern Hemisphere winter, or in the Alps or in the Rockies in the Northern Hemisphere winter. That was amazing for 4 years. But after those 4 years, kind of changing location every 6 months and, you know, having to make a whole new group of friends and things like that, I decided that I wanted to settle back in the UK.
Okay.
And properly put down some roots. And that's when I studied at the European Institute of Fitness, which was 2010. And I qualified as a master personal trainer. And coming straight out of that, I moved in with my brother into his box room for like 50 quid a week in Bethnal Green.
Bargain.
Which is a bargain for Bethnal Green, definitely. From there I was doing one-on-one PT, personal training.
Sure.
Which was great. And I did that for about 6 months before I started to kind of miss kind of the social interaction of group fitness, I guess, because with snowboarding it's very much about group classes and things like that, because it's almost like you board around in tribes almost,
you bond with new people, things.
Exactly. So because fitness boot camps were kind of really taking off then, I decided to set up my own fitness boot camp. And so I set up my fitness boot camp in it'd be kind of at the end of 2010. And then from there, over the next 5 years, I managed to grow it to 10 locations around the country. And we were doing pretty well. And I had my own YouTube channel and podcast as part of that. And I was kind of networking with lots of the well-known people that are out there today. But also at the end of 2015, I felt I was in a bit of a philosophical quandary where I was just getting really frustrated with the sheer number of people that were coming to us, and we'd have to completely re-educate them on how to get healthy.
Sure.
And what it means to be healthy as well.
Yeah.
And so I basically took it upon myself to pitch this idea of setting up a charity that's going to sort it out to everybody that's on our scientific advisory board today, which includes David Unwin, Trudy Deacon, Asim Malhotra,
yeah.
Many of the people that were at the conference this past weekend. But they said, sure, that sounds like a great idea. And so the next question came up, which was funding.
Mm-hmm.
So in this day and age, the amazing thing is that you can do is online crowdfunding.
Sure.
And so we set up an Indiegogo campaign, which is an online crowdfunding site.
It's a bit like Kickstarter or Patreon. That
yeah,
type. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly like that. We set it for a month and managed to double our target.
Wow.
By, you know, individual donations from people, you know.
Well, you obviously you hit on something that sort of was, you know, underlying, and obviously you spoke the right language to people who just want to improve things.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a matter of good timing. And as you say, yeah, I think kind of it got to a point where people were ready to take it to the next level.
Yeah.
Because there was quite a few people doing things on their own at the time. But I just saw that we need to get everybody together and organized and structured and focused, basically. And so, we managed to do that by March 2016. And 3 and a bit years later, we've had 4 conferences and we've made a lot of progress.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah, because I obviously follow you. And your name was mentioned because I follow people like Asim Malhotra. Since I started my journey, I just digest information and I try and put it over in layman's terms. And yourself and Asim, people like that, are a wealth of knowledge that speaks layman's terms. They don't put too much technology into it, but they will if you want them to. But it just makes it very simple to understand. And at the end of the day, it's all about common sense and what works for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, very much so. And that's what I always say, is that if it works for you, it works. Nobody can take away results from you if you've got them. And that's the thing, you do need to make sure that you're tracking things to make sure that you are getting results in some shape or form, ideally in the way of blood tests if you've got metabolic conditions and things like that. If it works, it works.
It does, yeah. And you know, luckily, touch wood, I always do my podcast on from the top of a piano, ladies and gentlemen. I never had to go for any blood tests, but at the time when I sort of started this and the warning signs were there, I knew I had to do something. And even if it was aesthetically to look better, to lose a lot of weight, it just improved everything else. What was probably going on in my body, or could have been going on in my body. So, and you've got these amazing scientists and medical advisors on board now. And your conference was at the headquarters of the General Practitioners, is that right?
Yeah, the Royal College of General Practitioners in London, yeah.
Wow, yeah. So, and were there many, obviously, people like myself? I know that likes of I think Daisy, the keto woman, was there, and a few other people that I've interviewed on the podcast. Are you finding that more of the, in the UK, the NHS, the GPs are now, you know, pricking their ears up and thinking something's happening here. People are getting results. I don't have to prescribe XYZ tablets, pills, things like that. Let's hear what these people have got to say. Are you finding that the more people are on in the professional medical world are actually listening now?
Very much so. And it's increasing month on month. You know, it's incredible, because so many GPs, practice nurses, diabetes nurses are starting to get results with this, and they're able to demonstrate that through the tracking systems that they've got on the NHS, you know. And for instance, David Unwin on Twitter has these fantastic patient graphs of HbA1c's, like blood tests, of his patients. That's anonymized data with permission from the patient, sure, to post it on social media. But this is happening all over, and it's, you just can't ignore it. And at the conference this year, in fact, we had the president of the Royal College of General Practitioners speaking, introducing David this year. So we've kind of essentially got the seal of approval from the president of the RCGP. So
hopefully that's going to leak down. And my in-laws are both doctors as well, but over in Dublin. And I was speaking to them. They're in MRI, radio therapy, things like that. But when they were doing their training, their 5-6 years training as a medic, they were saying that they only really get, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours worth of nutritional training. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully, now people can retrain and rethink, because the evidence is there, and they can go to papers rather than a snake oil salesman, to want of the better word, like myself, who just wants to promote it, but to say, look, evidence is here, XYZ are coming off pills, people are losing weight, people are getting happier in all different types of ways, and people are getting fitter, and not necessarily because they're going to the gym, it's just because the way of life that they're leading.
Oh, 100%. And there are some great resources out there. In fact, Dr. David Unwin wrote an e-learning module for the Royal College of General Practitioners that's on their website. So all NHS healthcare professionals can do a e-learning module on his methodology for advising diet for people living with type 2 diabetes. And it takes half an hour online, you know. So it's absolutely amazing. So that's something that we recommend healthcare professionals to do. You know, and this is coming from the RCGP, you know.
Yeah.
So it's got real credibility, and obviously it's got a link to us as well, because it's David Unwin.
Sure.
And then on top of that as well, so diabetes.co.uk have a very comprehensive healthcare professional platform that helps them figure out how to advise this and how to de-prescribe. So what you were talking about there in terms of the fact that medical professionals back in the day and even now don't get much in the way of nutrition education. But the healthcare professional platform from diabetes.co.uk teaches them how to de-prescribe, because they're not taught that either.
Sure.
At medical school, they're told how to prescribe and pile on the medication. They're just not taught how to bring it back.
But economically, it's getting less of a burden in terms of prescribing and paying for these pills and prescriptions. So even the practice managers of the surgeries where the GPs are, they must be quite happy because their bottom line's going, you know, they're not having to spend so much throughout their budget, you know, and then it'll feed itself back to our lovely NHS that, you know, we can get results by not prescribing, so we're not spending, so we can concentrate on spending it, you know, in other ways, you know, to help people and be preventative rather than reactive.
Oh, 100%. And again, to give David Unwin as an example.
Well, we love David Unwin. Like,
yeah, exactly. He's an amazing man, and he's our prime example. But it is because he's such a pioneer in all of this. So, for example, David spends £40,000 less per year on drugs for diabetes alone compared to all of the other surgeries that are in his area. And so if you extrapolate that out across all of the practices in the country, which is 9,400, you end up saving £376 million per year on diabetes drugs alone.
That's amazing.
and yeah, it is. It's incredible. and that doesn't even take into account the costs of preventing people going into amputations and eye surgery and things like that, which is actually 80% of the costs of type 2 diabetes.
And there's other, there's other, and the other related inflammatory diseases that come with that,
yes.
which mm-hmm. can, again, more drugs are being prescribed to. I know a good example is the statins and which I remember watching on Asim Malhotra's film. Again, it was adapted from the Pioppi diet book on how easy something like olive oil can just basically clear your pipes, as an old Welsh saying.
Brilliant.
In terms of your arteries and getting away from that stigma that cholesterol is bad. We need cholesterol to live, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's essential.
It's essential, you know. But it's so much sort of bad things. And again, about the fat, people afraid of it. But once people adapt to how their grandparents and grand-grandparents used to eat, it makes a lot of sense.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, It's funny, the dialogue that's going on at the moment with the current establishment is that what we're saying is a fad. However, it's actually the other way around.
Exactly. Yeah. The
diet that they've been peddling for the past 30, 40 years is actually the fad, because it's with new foods that haven't been around for very long, that we didn't evolve with. And the diet that we're talking about is the food that we did evolve with and that we've been eating for a very long time.
Yeah.
So
I think we've got 20 odd thousand years of real food eating, I think, on our side.
Yeah, exactly. Against the 30, 40 years of factory food.
Mm. Yeah, I remember I've been yo-yo dieting for most of my life, and my initial GP when I was, I don't know, 16, 17, I was putting some weight on in the sixth form. And he prescribed me with, you got to eat lots of fibre and whole grained, and go to the supermarket because X brand has just come out and they've got a low fat yogurt and things like that. Perhaps go to the gym, do some walking. Yeah, fair enough. But advent of becoming 16 and into my teens, I discovered beer, and it all went pear shaped. But I still tried every other year to go up and down. I'd lose a few stone here and there, lose two, put on three, and it just sort of escalated. And with the things that we're reading and you guys are promoting now, is I just realise it's basically common sense, real food. And I think it was Zoe Harcum's book, she basically says you can't outrun a bad diet. I noticed, I looked on Twitter yesterday, I think one of your, somebody was doing a talk, a lady that was saying that, you know, people are on low fat, they're going to the gym and still putting on weight. And there was a link from one of your somebody's Twitter followers to the actual presentation. I went through that and thought, that does make sense, you know. So yeah, and again, just follow the public health collaboration on Twitter, and loads of people are contributing in, and it'll network to other people in the community as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And if people want to check out some of the action from the weekend, if they follow the hashtag hashtag PHCLON LON 2019, then they'll be able to actually scroll through kind of all of the pictures and things like that people took at the conference. And yeah, there's some great photos of some of the slides of the presenters and things. We're going from strength to strength, to be honest. And I think it's because it's, as you say, it's common sense, it's logical, it's reasonable, and it works.
Yeah, and touch wood again. I'm touching the piano again, Sam. you had politicians there. You had Tom Watson, who yes. is you know, lost a lot of weight, and he puts it down to following Asim Malhotra's sort of method of the POP stroke Mediterranean way of eating. And if you know, my sort of vision would be, you know, whoever gets in power who's got the same mindset in terms of health and how to reduce burden on the NHS and ploughing more money by not spending it on certain things. Do you think that if we get more politicians who make the decisions about the bureaucracy and the economics about it, things will change in the next 5, 10, 15 years, or, you know, our lifetime?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, to have somebody like Tom Watson there, who's very much a very influential person in politics, was amazing, and to have his support as well,
especially at the time we're living in at the moment in the UK, you know, to give up his time for such a poignant
yeah. He's a busy guy at the moment, that's for sure.
Oh goodness.
Yeah, and to be able to, I mean, he was unfortunately only able to come for the Sunday morning. He had to kind of be elsewhere on the Saturday and the Sunday afternoon. But you know, he was telling me that, you know, he was so frustrated and annoyed that he couldn't be there all weekend because he wanted to be.
I can imagine so.
Yeah. I'm sure he'd prefer to be elsewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is honestly, he's really passionate about this, and he's really knowledgeable.
Yeah,
he knows everything about this community.
It doesn't matter where your bread's buttered, what side it's on politically. He just makes sense. There's no political agenda about it. He wants to make people healthier and create a better, you know, UK.
A health service as well.
Yeah, and a better health service.
Because one of the presenters, who is a farmer, was saying that at the moment it's the National Illness Treatment Service.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not the health service at the moment. And that's what it can be.
Yeah, we had
essentially if we go down this route.
Yeah, we had Susie Edge on about six episodes ago, who's a doctor up in Aberdeen. She's orthopaedic doctor, and she was saying, you know, she sees her team, her team of nurses and other doctors, and I think this is a statistic, give or take, that 50%, 60% of the NHS staff are technically overweight or obese.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, these are the people who are helping us. You know, why shouldn't we give them the knowledge to help them? And, you know, and again, I'm putting a business head on. It just saves, you know, sickness. You know, people are healthy, so they're happier at work. And it was quite a dramatic statement that she was saying, because she'll go into the staff room and there's always muffins and, you know, chocolate bars there. And there's no provision for, you know, what we eat.
Yeah, not at all. office cake culture and every other sugary snack that's, you know, rampant in the office is something that we do want to try and tackle. And we're going to try and tackle it through a campaign that we've got coming up next month, actually.
Okay.
Called Real Food Day.
Amazing.
So it's on Wednesday the 19th of June. People can subscribe to the website, which is realfoodday.org. On the website there, actually this week, we're going to be releasing resources and activity packs for families, for places of work, and for schools, so that you can try and implement more real food into those environments. And so, for instance, in the workplaces activity pack, we've got a section in the document to hold a biscuit amnesty, basically. alongside that, to make a real food pledge for a month. So not only do you kind of, you know, put your biscuits in the bin for a month, but you pledge to just have real food snacks for a month, you know, just to try and nudge people in the right direction and try and
create a
culture of real food.
That is amazing, because we noticed at home that we're not throwing away as much recycling, because we're buying real food, etc. And another thing that we are doing is we've got a milkman now, rather than going to the supermarket and buying plastic bottles. But he supplies the best, creamiest, full fat milk that you can think of. And we, in the morning, we're fighting for the top of the milk, which I used to do when I was like 4 or 5.
I remember myself as well.
Or the birds would peck at the foil lids. You know, if
I
you didn't get
it before I did.
Yeah, if you didn't get up soon enough. But yeah, what real food day? Now I will, if you send me the link, I will post that on the notes as well, Sam. But another thing that I'd love to get involved in is the Public Health Collaboration Ambassador Programme. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it was an idea that we had a couple of years ago about how to try and best use everybody's energy. You know, there are so many people out there that want to make a difference, and spread the word like you are, about real food and its impact on health, and try and give that opportunity to others. And, you know, because we're trying to change things within the NHS, we came up with this idea for the Ambassadors Program. So it's a volunteer program where people go on a training day with myself, and obviously I train them all the ins and outs of being an ambassador. Mm-hmm. But one of the main roles is for them to liaise with local healthcare professionals, ideally working within the NHS. And they present to them a standardised 15-minute presentation that we've got that takes them through what the PHC is, why we do what we do, and how we can help them as well. And one of the main ways that we're trying to help healthcare professionals is by helping them set up free public monthly meetings for their patients to attend. And at those meetings, alongside the supportive healthcare professionals, they deliver real food presentations to the patients. And also try and get, you know, successful patients to present their story on how they did it as well, and essentially create a community of patients that are going to support each other through this journey, and also to nurture a network of healthcare professionals. And it's the ambassador's role to try and create a culture of collaboration between the patients and the healthcare professionals. And if we get this going in enough places throughout the UK, then you know that's going to just filter through the NHS and create more of a culture of collaboration rather than a one-way street when it can sometimes be between a healthcare professional and a patient.
Yeah, sure.
And at the moment we have 150 ambassadors across the country in various places, from Aberdeen to Penzance, you know.
Right.
It's incredible to see it grow, and it's incredible to see the levels of success that some of them are getting. For instance, a guy in Liverpool presented at the conference this weekend, one of the ambassadors,
sure.
Because he's been so successful. It's a guy called Andrew Bishop. He's on Twitter. His Twitter handle's at Type2Rebel.
Okay.
The way our strategy with ambassadors is that they join their registered practices patient participation group, which in England and Wales, every single practice has to have one.
Sure.
And it's your right as a patient to join that group. And so he joined that and then, you know, just started the conversation with the other patients and also the practice manager. And they kind of were interested. And then it just went from there, basically. And now he has, I think, about four groups in different practices around Liverpool.
That's amazing.
Which is incredible. And there's a really good video, actually, that's just recently been posted that they did, because it's a group of practices, like the same group.
Yeah, sure.
They did a video. So if you search on YouTube, Care Merseyside,
yep.
It should come up. It's like, I think the title's 8-week low carb program. Or something like that. 8-week low carb course, I think.
Yeah.
If you click on that, then it's great to see, you know, you've got Andy, who's been through the journey himself of putting his type 2 diabetes into remission, and then just basically paying it forward.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you see these people talk about how much better they feel and things like that. And I mean, if we can get that going across every single town and city in the country, I mean, there's no stopping us, honestly.
Yeah, I know, and it's real people telling you about their journey rather than some people are quite reluctant to talk freely in front of their doctor even about such a thing, or I used to be fearful of authority figures. I got over that and whatever, but it was if somebody's walked the walk, got the t-shirt and everything like that, I think you're more inclined to say, my God, you know, how did you do it? You know, well,
yeah,
very simple. You know, there's a few easy steps and it's common sense. And by the way, it's not going to cost the earth because I get everything from Aldi and Lidl, you know.
Yeah.
So, and then if I can, the local butchers is amazing, you know. And, you know, and support your local milk, but you know, flying the flag for, you know, for it being a sustainable way of doing it. But there are ways of finding that real food out there, and our supermarket bills have slightly gone down because there's no waste anymore. And yeah. We're planning our meals rather than just getting, we were getting a freezer full of microwave meals. Mm-hmm. 2-3 years ago,
right.
and just being lazy about it. And then we thought about it, myself and my wife. I think we're not a real good example to our children. you know, they have their treats, they have their chips and sure. their nuggets and things like that. But they we never have sweets in the house, which is a, you know, but we do get them, you know, if we're going to the cinema, it's a treat, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not all the time. And back to the NHS, and it's reflecting in our schools. My eldest son, as he's in first year of sixth form, he last week, fair play to him, he went to the head teacher and said to her, you know, one, we're using more plastic and we're using a lot of throwaway bits and pieces that are not recyclable. And have you had a look at our menu in the dinner hall? Which I think Jamie Oliver was flying the flag, but it, you know, that was news a few years ago, and it comes down to how much pence it costs to produce school meals and return on investment, rather than, you know, we should be investing in the kids and their health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's something that we want to try and address with Real Food Day, is that we will try and start getting that conversation going at schools. You do have to be slightly delicate, because it's a sensitive issue, obviously. But at the same time, I mean, you know, When Jamie Oliver did those programs, I think he managed to do it on the same budget. He managed to change the menus on exactly the same budget. So it just is bewildering why, you know, you can't at least do that.
Exactly, you know, and still have a treat day, you know, where in Wales it's fish and chip day every day on every Friday. Because one, it's a Catholic school because it's fish, and the other, it's a treat. But if we can, you know, the other 4 days, let's get them eating wisely and you know, taking their own responsibility rather than just being, you know, literally spoon fed, and not having a choice of what they can eat.
100%, and that's something else really that kind of goes on in this conversation, is that, you know, kind of nanny state and things like that. But, you know, the opposite has happened, where the food environment becomes so twisted and such a fake food environment that your only choices are fake food.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, you don't have the choice of fake food or real food. You only have the choice of fake food.
Yeah.
So kind of, you know, it's its own control in a way anyway. But it's very sad. But I'm hoping that we can raise more public awareness that this is possible in any walk of life through Real Food Day. That, you know, whether you be a shift worker or a teacher or, you know, a single parent at home, it's possible.
Yeah.
You know, it can be tough, but if you use the right strategies, then you can radically transform your health and your own life as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was another thing that Tom Watson was talking about, actually, that when he made this transformation, that he felt like his cognitive abilities increased.
Yeah.
Like, he was just, his cognitive clarity was so much higher. That he felt like he could process more information, he could make clearer decisions, he was able to speak more clearly, concisely, and eloquently as well. And, you know, if we can get everybody in the country
especially
going down that line.
You know, at the time, back to the school kids, it's that time of year when it's GCSEs, it's A-levels, it's SATs, all those type of things. If we could get their brain working by just fueling it better, I'm sure that results would improve.
No doubt.
You know, even if it's an A to an A star, you know, a B to a B plus, a C to a C plus. Mm-hmm. Any type of help, and it could be just down to, you know, what they're putting in their mouths.
Oh yeah, 100%. So fingers crossed in the coming years we're going to sort that out. And it, I mean, unfortunately, it kind of all starts off by trying to improve healthy eating guidelines.
Yes.
Because that essentially is what a lot of things are based on, and that's what their education is based on as well. Mm-hmm. So our children are being taught that the Eat Well Guide is the most evidence-based way of eating, which it is not. that makes me very sad, because I've got a two-year-old. So I'm very much hoping that by the time that she gets to secondary school, at least, I mean, I'd love it if I could sort this out before she goes to primary school, but that's maybe a bit ambitious. Yeah. But by the time that she gets to secondary school, that I can have the Eat Well Guide improved to something that is more evidence-based and logical and reasonable, so that, you know, she'll be learning the correct things.
Yeah.
And also that, you know, school meals will be based more on that than on the Eat Well Guide.
Yeah, and look into the future, that she's got a dad who's going to live to a ripe old age and not have any of these awful inflammatory diseases, and just drift off when he needs to. You know, in his hundreds now, they're looking at statistically, get my teeth back in. but yeah, that's the main reason I did it. You know, it's me, and I'm enjoying it, and yeah, I feel good and everything. But at the end of the day, it's about, you know, my wife and my two boys, and I want to be around for them a lot longer than what I could. If I would have kept on that road, you know, I've had a relative die at 49. I'm 51. Just heard a work colleague's uncle just died at 53. You know, with a history of, you know, social drinking, but eating the wrong thing, smoking, that type of thing. Right. But you just think, yeah, you know, if I'd have known this in my 20s, in my wild days, when I worked for a brewery, yeah, you know, but hindsight's a great thing. But at least, you know, if I can get the message out to anybody and improve somebody's, one person, you know, take them off metformin, you know, that that's my pay it forward done, you know. And again, that's why after this conversation we'll chat about the ambassadors program. But
sure.
on a fun note, Sam, tell me about the festival Real Food Rocks.
I'm really excited for this. So Real Food Rocks is a food festival that we're hosting on Saturday, the 20th of July, up in a place called Braithay Hall, which is near Ambleside in the Lake District.
Yep.
And the idea is that it's a place where like-minded people can enjoy real food, mm-hmm. real music, and have a lot of real fun. There's going to kind of be, you know, all sorts of workshops, from cooking demonstrations to kind of family fun exercise and things like that. It's really a place to try and, I suppose, have a family friendly event that's cheap, because tickets for adults are tenner, and for children it's £5.
Yeah.
And under fives go free. It's really a place to bring people together, to really connect with other real foodies, and also try and engage the public more in this as well, you know.
Make it more real life, you know. Even Chris Evans, a DJ in the UK, has just started a Run Fest. Runfest Run with his cohort, and again, he's got chefs there, and obviously promoting healthy living and fitness and things like that. Something like Real Food Rocks just floats my boat. One, I will be tapping you for next year, because I am in a band and they are called the Cheese Cutters. So
amazing, brilliant,
and we sort of fit in with the type of music that you've got on But it's more like jumping up and down, having a good time, dancing to folk and folk and roll. So no doubt I will be emailing you after this one. But we're hoping to come up as well. We've if we can, we can find a campsite. We've got a VW camper van, so
there's plenty around there. You should
Yeah. So we're going to have a look, see if we can book it now, and then book the tickets or whatever. So. But you've got people like David Unwin coming up and Asim Malhotra.
Yes, yeah. Alongside people like Katie and Giancarlo Caldesi, who were speaking at the conference this weekend actually.
Yeah.
And they're restaurateurs basically, and they have two Italian restaurants. I mean, their story is quite interesting.
That is interesting,
Because, of course, Giancarlo's Italian and Katie's English, but they own these Italian restaurants and, you know, of course, eating pasta and some bread and things like that. But Giancarlo ended up, you know, living with type 2 diabetes. And, you know, after Katie did some research, you know, the only way forward that she thought was any good was a low carb diet. So, you know, this middle-aged Italian guy had to cut out pasta and bread for the first time. But you know, he's so much better for it. When we get the talks onto our YouTube channel in the coming months, you'll see it. But you know, at some stages during his talk, he's running up and down the stage like a little happy lad, you know, on his tiptoes. Absolutely amazing. He's just such an energetic bloke now, and kind of looking at the photos where he was before, you know, he was in pain, and he was talking about the experience of him driving along and then his eyesight just went and he had to pull over in his car, you know. And in actual fact, even when he managed to put his type 2 diabetes into remission through a low carb diet, he still had a flutter of he was at a garage and he got a chocolate bar, you know, because he thought, okay, I'll just have one,
sure,
you know. And so he ate this chocolate bar, and then he got back on the road, and then his eyesight went again and he had to pull over. And you know, that if that's not a warning telling you to never ever do that again, I don't know what is. But yeah, now he's kind of like never gonna do that again.
Yeah, no way. And again, back to Asim's film, is it The Big Fat Fix, something like that?
Yes, yeah, correct.
And it's the book with
Donald O'Neill.
The Pioppi Diet. Again, it's based in Italy, and it is a place called Pioppi. It's on the Amalfi Coast, that area. And it's a place where people forget to die, and that's the basis around it. But they do have pasta, but they have it as a treat or a small quantity as a starter. It's not our archetypal go to an Italian restaurant and fill your boots with lasagna. It's about fish, it's about nuts, it's about olive oil, back to you, Sam. It's about real food, and so you know, if people like that who was technically in the business of selling carbs can mm-hmm. do it, you know, any restaurateur can, and anybody can fix the menu. There's a new restaurant called Blend at the Black Lion in a small village up here, and they've just opened as a cafe now, but I've persuaded them to get a keto breakfast on the menu, you know. That's and right. People are asking, what is keto? They think, oh, isn't that the sidekick in the Pink Panther films? I said, no, that's Kato. Yeah. And but they're asking about it, and they're now coming to me and other people that have been on the way of eating. You know, what can we do? Can we do a main meal now? I said, yeah, sure. What can you do with beef, you know, steak? Can we make it vegetarian? Yeah, there's loads of vegetarian options out there that you can still go low carb, you know, high fat and real, you know, because there's the producers around here. So that's fantastic. I cannot wait until the festival, and I'm persuaded it's the last week of term, so it'll be a good excuse for us to get out in the van, or even find a hotel, you know, and I'm come and meet you guys. Is it over 1 day, 2 days?
One day. But there's an evening event as well.
Okay.
Which is a separate ticket. So if you can only make the day, then just come to the day. But if you can come to the day in the evening, that'd be great.
Amazing. Right, I'm going to wrap this podcast up. And before we say goodbye, Sam, can you just fill us in on any links and website, Facebook pages, Twitter handles that we can promote for you? And we'll do our best to do that on our social media as well.
Sure thing. So the website for the Public Health Collaboration is phcuk.org. People can follow me on Twitter at Sam Felton, and be sure to check out realfoodday.org for the Real Food Day next month. And then for the food festival, Real Food Rocks, which is happening on Saturday, 20th of July, make sure that you go to realfoodrocks.co.uk.
Brilliant. Excellent. And hopefully I will be asking you to come on again after Real Food Rocks, if you don't mind, and we can discuss the carnage that goes on in a good way. Yeah. And the people we meet. But I'd like to thank Sam Felton for coming on to the Keto Happiness Podcast. I've been Rob Saunders, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye for now.